You know, when you grab your keys in the morning, pour your coffee, and just head out the door for your daily commute.
Right.
Down the sawmill or Route 9A, there's this like unspoken assumption of safety.
Yeah, completely.
You're just trying to get to work, right? You're thinking about your first meeting or, you know, what you're having for lunch.
Not the trees.
Exactly. You certainly aren't thinking about the literal ground beneath your tires or the trees passing by your window. You just assume the path is clear.
Which is human nature, really.
Yeah. But then, the unthinkable happens. A tree falls. You swerve, you
It
crash.
happens so fast.
So fast. And the police arrive, they write up a report, and they call it an act of God or a freak accident. End of story, right?
That's what they want you to think, yeah.
Right. Well, what if it wasn't? What if the city actually knew that tree was dying like 6 months ago?
Oh, that changes everything.
It really does. So today we're taking a deep dive into an incredibly eye-opening legal brief from the law offices of Norman Gershon.
It's a fantastic brief.
It is. And our mission today is to sort of pull back the curtain on this invisible web of liability that surrounds our daily commutes, specifically in Westchester County and New York City.
Because it's a lot more complex than people realize.
Definitely. We're going to unpack how split-second tragedies really happen, and crucially, what victims' families actually need to know to protect their rights when a government entity tries to, you know, sweep their negligence under the rug.
It really is a profound shift in perspective because we're so conditioned to view the road as this static, safe environment provided by the city or the state.
Right, we just trust them.
Exactly. We assume the people in charge are meticulously maintaining it. But the reality of roadway infrastructure is, well, it's highly dynamic, often neglected, and when things go wrong, the legal mechanisms to hold these institutions accountable are incredibly complex.
Okay, let's unpack this because the chilling reality that we discovered in the source material is that what most of us dismiss as just random, unavoidable accidents actually involve deeply complex webs of negligence.
Yeah, the word accident is almost a misnomer.
Right. We aren't just talking about bad luck today. We're talking about accountability. And the source material anchors this in a very real, very tragic, recent event that kind of brings the abstract concept of liability right down to the pavement.
It really does. The brief outlines a harrowing, fatal incident on Route 9A in Mount Pleasant.
Up in Westchester.
Yeah, up in Westchester County. And the facts, as laid out in the initial reports, are basically every commuter's worst nightmare.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the early morning commute. A driver is heading down the southbound roadway near Hawthorne, and suddenly there's just a massive fallen tree completely blocking a portion of the road.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, the
Yeah.
driver has a fraction of a second to react. He attempts to avoid the obstruction, loses control of his vehicle, leaves the roadway entirely, and crashes into another tree located along the shoulder.
God.
And despite a rapid emergency response and, you know, intense life-saving efforts, the driver tragically died from his injuries.
It's just absolutely heartbreaking to even think about. And, you know, it makes me think of a domino effect.
How so?
Well, because when you look closely at the anatomy of a crash like this, it's rarely just the obstacle itself, like in this case, the tree lying across the asphalt that causes the fatal impact.
Right.
The first domino falls when the hazard appears, but the actual devastation comes from the forced split-second reaction to it. You know, the swerving, the loss of control, the secondary impact.
What's fascinating here is, well, it's the specific geographical context the source provides. This isn't happening in a vacuum or on some wide-open interstate out west.
Right.
It happens on local roads that have a very specific and, frankly, treacherous profile. If you drive heavily traveled routes in this area,
Like Route 9A or the Sawmill.
exactly, Route 9A, the Sawmill River Parkway, the Taconic State Parkway, down into the Bronx, and you know exactly what they look
Oh,
like.
yeah, they're beautiful.
They are aesthetically beautiful because they are heavily tree-lined. But from an engineering standpoint, they feature extremely narrow shoulders and offer virtually zero room for driver recovery if something goes wrong.
Right, they're essentially winding corridors. If an obstacle appears in your lane, you just have nowhere to bail out.
Precisely. And the physics of navigating a hazard in that specific environment are just brutal. The brief details the exact sequence of driver reactions when facing fallen trees, debris, or weather-related obstacles.
Which is?
First, the driver is forced to brake and swerve suddenly to avoid a direct high-speed impact with the blockage.
Because hitting a massive tree head-on is a death sentence anyway.
Exactly. But because the road is narrow and winding, that sudden sharp steering input at 50 or 60 miles per hour breaks the friction between the tires and the road.
Ah, basics.
The vehicle loses traction. The driver then instinctively overcorrects, turning the wheel hard the other way, trying to wrest control back.
Which makes it worse.
It does. It often results in a phenomenon called a yaw, where the car slides sideways and leaves the roadway entirely.
Wow.
And once you leave the pavement on the Taconic or Route 9A, you aren't sliding into an empty field. You are immediately striking fixed, unyielding objects, guardrails, rock outcroppings, or, as in this tragic case, other massive trees.
That's a terrifying sequence.
Yeah.
And understanding the physical layout of these treacherous roadways naturally forces us to ask a critical question.
Yeah.
If we know these roads are designed this way, with basically zero margin for error, and if we know they're this dangerous when obstructed, why are the hazards there in the first place?
And that question fundamentally challenges the vocabulary we use. The source materials is very clear on this. Crashes involving roadway hazards are often not simply unavoidable accidents.
Right.
Calling them accidents implies an act of fate, right? A random roll of the dice where no one is to blame.
Like it just happened.
Exactly. But the reality is that there are deep systemic liability issues at play here. We're talking about negligent roadway maintenance, failure to remove known hazards, improper signage, and municipal responsibility.
Okay, hold on. Let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Sure.
So what does this all mean in practice? Because if a massive storm rolls through Westchester and a heavy wind blows a 70-foot oak tree down into the middle of Route 9A,
yeah,
is that actually someone's fault? Or is that just a tragic, unavoidable act of nature? I mean, municipalities can't control the weather. You can't sue a thunderstorm.
It's a very fair question. And frankly, it is exactly the defense that the municipality's lawyers will immediately raise. They'll call it an act of God.
Right.
But here is the clarification and why the source emphasizes the legal necessity of an intense investigation. Yes, a storm is an act of nature. But the condition of that tree before the storm arrived, that is entirely a matter of municipal maintenance. When families are left dealing with catastrophic injuries or a wrongful death, uncovering the who and the why is absolutely vital.
So you're saying it's not just about the moment the tree fell. It's about the entire history of the tree leading up to that moment.
Exactly. An experienced investigator isn't just looking at the police report. They're looking for something called constructive notice.
Constructive notice?
Yeah. Did the town or the state have reason to know this hazard existed? To prove this, an attorney might file FOL request, Freedom of Information Law request, to secure municipal maintenance logs or 311 complaint records.
Oh, wow. So they look for complaints.
Right. Did local residents complain about that specific tree leaning dangerously over the road 3 months ago? Mm-hmm. Did a municipal arborist flag it for root rot last year, but the town simply didn't allocate the budget to cut it down?
That's huge.
It is. Furthermore, they will bring in independent arborists to do forensic analysis on the stump. An expert can look at the wood and say, this tree has been dead and rotting for 5 years. It was a hazard waiting to fall.
Wow. So if the town knew that tree was rotting, or if they, you know, should have known because they're responsible for inspecting the roadside, and they just didn't get around to cutting it down.
Yes.
That act of nature defense, it completely falls apart. It suddenly becomes a failure to remove a known hazard.
Precisely. And that is a powerful pivot in how we understand responsibility on our roadways. It takes the blame off the driver who was forced into an impossible physics equation and places it squarely on the institution that failed to maintain a safe environment.
But because you have to prove that the municipality knew about this rotting tree,
yeah,
you need concrete evidence.
You do.
You need to examine the trunk, look at the rot, take photographs of the scene. And that creates a massive logistical problem for a victim's family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's a fatal crash on a major commuter artery like the sawmill.
Oh, they're clearing it immediately.
Right. The very first thing the state is going to do is clear that road to get traffic moving. They're going to chop up that tree, sweep away the debris, and open the lanes back up in a matter of hours.
It's a literal race against the clock. The physical evidence of negligence is quite literally being fed into a wood chipper and hauled away while the family is still sitting in a hospital waiting room dealing with unimaginable grief.
It really feels like a melting ice cube.
I like that analogy.
The longer you wait to investigate a crash site, the less evidence you have left to prove liability. The skid marks wash away in the rain. The rotting trunk of the tree is gone.
Yeah.
The municipal maintenance logs might conveniently, you know, get lost in a bureaucratic shuffle. Every hour that passes, your evidence is just melting away.
That is a perfect analogy, but the melting ice cube isn't just about physical evidence. It's about a very strict legal clock as well.
Oh, right.
And this is a nuance that catches so many families off guard. If you are hit by a private citizen, you might have years to file a lawsuit before the statute of limitations runs out.
Sure.
But when you're dealing with a roadway hazard, you are usually taking on a government entity, a town, a county, or the state of New York.
Right. And the brief mentions that claims against municipalities have strict, incredibly tight deadlines. How tight are we actually talking about here?
Incredibly tight. It stems from an old legal concept called sovereign immunity, the idea that you historically couldn't sue the king.
Okay.
Today, the government allows you to sue them, but they make the rules extremely rigid to protect themselves. In New York, under the general municipal law, you don't have years. You have to file what is called a notice of claim, usually within just 90 days of the incident.
90 days? That's barely 3 months.
Barely.
If you're recovering from a spinal injury or grieving a loved one, 90 days goes by in a flash. What happens if you miss that window? Say you file on day 91.
If you miss that 90-day window to file a notice of claim, you can be permanently barred from seeking justice.
Seriously?
Seriously. Your case is entirely void, regardless of how overwhelming the evidence of their negligence might be.
That is terrifying. Mm-hmm. Because that evidence vanishes in hours and your legal rights can vanish in weeks, the family is at an immediate, profound disadvantage against the government.
Very much so.
They need someone who already knows how to preserve the scene, how to demand the maintenance logs before they disappear, and how to file that notice of claim perfectly.
Yeah, you can't wing it.
And this is exactly why this brief from the law offices of Norman Gershon emphasizes that acting quickly is an absolute prerequisite for justice. You need a seasoned car accident lawyer, specifically one who serves Westchester County in the NYC area, and knows exactly how these local municipal courts operate.
And that local expertise is critical. You need a firm that knows how to navigate the specific bureaucratic hurdles of Westchester County or the New York City Transit Authority.
Which brings us to the sponsor of the eye-opening material we're discussing today. The law offices of Norman Gershon handle exactly these types of highly complex, time-sensitive cases against municipalities and massive insurance companies.
They're the real deal.
They fight for victims across White Plains, Yonkers, the Bronx, Manhattan, Queens, and the broader NYC metro area. And if you or someone you know is in this situation, we want to emphasize their specific contact number right now. It's 914-485-4444.
Right.
That's 914-485-1444. And crucially, you only pay if you win.
That contingency structure, only paying if you win, is incredibly important. When families are facing sudden catastrophic medical bills or the sudden loss of a primary earner, it completely removes the financial barrier to accessing top-tier legal representation.
Yeah, that's a huge.
They can hire a heavyweight without paying a dime out of pocket.
And you really do need a heavyweight because going up against the state or the MTA or massive corporate insurance companies, you know, you can't just hire the lawyer from a billboard who just wants a quick settlement.
No, you definitely can't.
Understanding exactly what kind of lawyer it takes to battle these institutions reveals why Norman Gershon's specific track record is highlighted so prominently in our source material.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the legal landscape in New York is incredibly competitive. There are thousands of lawyers. Mm. But within that ecosystem, reputation amongst peers is everything.
The brief points out that with over 35 years of trial experience, Norman Gershon is known as the lawyer other attorneys call to try their toughest cases.
Wow, that's high praise.
That is a profound statement. It means that when another law firm hits a wall, when a case is too legally complex, or the defenders are simply too powerful and refuse to settle fairly, they bring him in to handle the actual courtroom battle.
He's the lawyer they call when things get real. And the brief says that because of this 35-year history, insurance companies know and fear Norman Gershon. Why does an insurance company actually fear a specific lawyer?
Because insurance companies base their entire business model on risk assessment.
Oh.
Most lawyers settle. They don't want to go to trial because trials are expensive and they're unpredictable. Insurance companies know this, so they offer low-ball settlements, knowing the lawyer will likely take it.
Makes sense.
But when an insurance adjuster sees a lawyer like Norman Gershon, someone who is fully willing and capable of taking a case all the way to a jury verdict, they are forced to evaluate the risks entirely differently. They know they can't bluff him.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the brief doesn't just rest on a reputation. It provides the hard numbers, the proven results.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to push back on this for a second, because we see these numbers and they almost don't feel real.
I know what you mean.
We're looking at a $16.5 million verdict in a case called Betancourt v. NYCTA for catastrophic bus collision injuries. Wait, $16.5 million?
Yeah.
How does a jury even arrive at a number like that? Is that just a random punishment for the transit authority?
Not at all. It's actually deeply mathematical and incredibly difficult to prove. The NYCTA, the New York City Transit Authority, is an unbelievably formidable opponent with virtually unlimited legal resources.
Oh, for sure.
To get a jury to award $16.5 million, you have to meticulously build a case layer by layer. First, you have to prove liability using accident reconstruction experts to show exactly how the bus driver or the authority was negligent.
Right.
Then you have to prove the damages. This isn't just about pain and suffering. A lawyer has to bring in economists and medical experts to build a life care plan.
A life care plan.
Yeah. If a victim suffers a catastrophic spinal injury, how much will 2047 nursing care cost for the next 40 years? How much are the architectural modifications to make their home wheelchair accessible?
Oh, my gosh.
What are their exact lost future earnings adjusted for inflation?
Oh, wow. So you are literally calculating the exact economic cost of giving this person their life back, or, you know, as close to as possible, and forcing the negligent party to pay for it?
Exactly. Securing a verdict of that magnitude requires an airtight, masterfully tried case where the jury sees undeniable proof of both the fault and the staggering future costs.
And the hits just keep coming in this brief. There's a $14.5 million settlement in Lynn v. MTA for a severe multi-injury crash case, a $5.068 million verdict in Young v. Ball for a motor vehicle sideswipe that resulted in severe spinal injury.
That's massive.
And a $2.5 million verdict in Yurkovich v. Seppin specifically for a Westchester County car accident case. We are talking about multi-million dollar wins across the board.
Those numbers represent a consistent, proven ability to uncover liability in highly complicated accident scenarios. It proves an ability to demonstrate to a jury exactly how a failure in duty directly resulted in life-altering harm.
But what I found incredibly moving in this deep dive isn't just the institutional wins or the giant numbers. It's the human element.
Absolutely.
If you were on that jury, you'd be looking at a real family. And the source contrasts those massive verdicts with deeply personal client testimonials. These are the people behind the case names. You have Nancy Joyce, who said Norman Gershon, quote, worked his magic and got me a bigger settlement than I expected. Kind, caring, and compassionate.
Compassion is a word you don't always hear associated with high stakes, multi-million dollar trial law.
Right. And then there's Lance from New York, who called him thorough, well-prepared, and his courtroom demeanor was very professional, top-notch. And my absolute favorite, TD from New York, who noted, he goes above and beyond. I felt like I was his only client.
That synthesis is vital. What we're seeing here is a rare and highly effective combination. On one hand, you have fearless courtroom prowess that literally scares insurance companies and extracts eight-figure verdicts from massive transit authorities.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you have highly individualized, compassionate client care where someone feels like they were the only case on the desk.
Which is so important.
It is. And that combination is exactly what families need when they are grieving, overwhelmed, and fighting for justice simultaneously. They need a shark in the courtroom to fight the institutions, but a fiercely protective, communicative advocate in their living room.
That is perfectly said.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we have to look back at where we started. That daily commute on tree-lined roads like the Taconic, the Sawmill, or Route 9A.
Yeah.
The illusion that a hazard in the road is just a random act of bad luck. We've seen how quickly those beautiful environments can turn deadly in an instant due to the unforgiving physics of narrow shoulders and fixed obstacles. And most importantly, we've unpacked the hidden mechanics of the legal system. We've learned why uncovering the liability behind these crashes, the ignored 311 complaints, the rotting trees, the municipal negligence, requires immediate expert action before the evidence is thrown in a wood chipper.
A melting ice cube. And the 90-day clock ticking down on that notice of claim, you simply cannot afford to wait.
You really can't. So we want to remind you directly, if you or your family are facing a complex, serious, or overlooked injury case, you need 35 years of trial experience on your side. Do not let an insurance company or municipality sweep the evidence away while you are trying to heal.
Absolutely not.
Call the lawyer other attorneys call.
Call the law offices of Norman Gershon at 914-485-1444. Once again, that is 914-485-1444. You only pay if you win.
This deep dive really forces a paradigm shift in how we view the infrastructure we use every single day. And it raises an important question for you to mull over, building on that concept of failure to remove known hazards.
If a municipality knows about a hazard, if they've received the complaints, and they simply fail to allocate the resources to fix it in time, at what point does a road designed for public transit essentially become a trap waiting to be sprung? The next time you drive past a downed branch on the shoulder or notice a leaning tree on a sharp curve, ask yourself, are you just navigating traffic or are you actively relying on a stranger's maintenance schedule for your life?